Welcome to the Hairdryer Treatment Podcast, powered by Kevin Grogan Soccer, Soccer Coffee, and much more.
Here today with Kevin Grogan, a podcast up and running. Just want to go over just exactly who Kevin is and how his career is going. Joe Bean here. I've done a few podcasts already with Kevin, so Kevin's on the other side of the coin today, so he's going to have to answer a few questions. The highlight of your career playing-wise?
I would say winning the European Championship with Ireland in 98 with Brian Kerr as my manager and Noel O'Reilly as my coach. I think you'd have to say that was the highlight of being involved with such a great squad of players, the likes of Andy Reid, John O'Shea, Lee Miller, who sadly passed away recently, and winning a European Championship representing your country at under 16. It was back in 1998. I think that's the highlight.
You were with United when you made the Irish team. Were you carrying a bit of an injury going into that tournament?
Yeah, well, I think it's well documented. I had a lot of kind of struggles with injuries over the years. Started with Osgood Slater's disease and Buckman's disease, which are basically growing pains in your knees and hips, which wasn't really a big issue. It was just a matter of growing out of them. But then eventually it turned into a big problem with my pelvis, bony erosion on the left side of my pelvis, which after many operations led to me retiring from playing. But over the years, I never really got going. It was very, very stop-start in terms of injury, operation, rehab, comeback and so on. And then I'd break down again. So it was very stop-start and very frustrating in terms of the injuries I had.
But you actually got in on a few games, did you not? You played 3 or 4 times in that tournament. Do you remember the games?
Well, that tournament, yeah. I mean, at that time I had the Osgood Slater's, which was in the knees, which was the growing pains. And just under the knee, you feel the pain and get a bit of a lump. So that wasn't a concern. That was more of when you're sore, don't play. When you're not sore, play. So Manchester United, the physio, Dave Feeve, had written a letter to Brian Kerr and the FAI just to make sure they were aware of it and obviously to manage the injury. So I played 3 of the 6 games and it was kind of one game on, one game off. So I got a lot of playing time in that tournament and was happy to contribute to it. And, you know, to be fair, the injury was managed. And it was just a fantastic time in relation to, you know, a highlight of my career and playing with such great players, with great managers, really, you know.
Tell us about Brian Kerr. How good is Brian Kerr?
Yeah, Brian was great, and we've touched on Brian. I think he's been in a few podcasts we've already done. Paul Smith last week talked about him, and we talked about him when we talked about the current kind of international setup. But just a great, great manager, very meticulous, great man manager. And his sidekick was Noel O'Reilly, who sadly passed away. But Noel was brilliant, and they got the best out of us, and great camaraderie around the team, and Noel had a guitar, great sing songs and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was just a great time. We were proud to pull on the jersey and play for our country and beat some big, big countries in that tournament, and earned the right to win it. Great time.
You got a chance to meet your mum and dad after the games when you were taken on a bus through Dublin, is that right?
Yeah, afterwards we got the...
How did you feel?
We got the royal treatment. We had the, you know, the red carpet, and we had an open-top bus from the airport over to the airport hotel, actually. It was a short ride, but and then we had a reception with all our families and friends. And, yeah, it was just a proud time for me and my family, and definitely the highlight, over the years. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
So you're 16 years of age. So where are you at with your United career? You're obviously coming out of United to play for Ireland. Are you an academy player at this stage? Have you signed a contract with them?
Yeah, I was at Manchester United since I was 11 years of age. I first went over on trial and then went on all my school holidays from 11 to 15 and trained and trialled and played. And then when I was 15, I went full time. It was just after third year, and I went over. There was a loophole in the system where we would have been going into fourth year, which is considered transition year in Ireland. So they kind of got me over a year early, kind of saying it was work experience as such. So I would have, at that point, I would have been already full time a full-time signed player at Manchester United and had a season under my belt of training and playing for the academy, which was obviously a fantastic experience with great players, great coaches. We had the famous Eric Harrison and Neil Bailey were our youth team coaches. Eric was really one of the main reasons a lot of the top players came through the system, like the class of 92, Beckham and Giggs and Butt and the Nevilles and Scholes. So I had a great insight from him and Neil Bailey, who I actually met recently in New York for coffee. He was a fantastic youth coach as well. You obviously had Sir Alex Ferguson as the first team manager with Brian Kidd, and Jim Ryan, who was a former Busby Babe, was the reserve coach. So it was a fantastic setup there. And yeah, I was a year into it, and yeah, I was just, things were going well at that period.
Didn't you win? You won a league, or you won a playoff or something with United, around that time. You actually came back, or was that after the Irish, triumph?
Yeah, I mean, we always had great players at Man United, and we were always in and around it, in terms of winning things and getting to the playoffs and playing lots of big games. And then you'd obviously have the Youth Cup, which was a big kind of tournament for youth players. So always lots of big games along the way. And, you know, my particular age group would have had Danny Webber in it and Jimmy Davis. Jimmy sadly died in a car accident, but was a quality player, probably would have gone on and had a big career. You had the likes of Luke Chadwick and David Healy, Wes Brown. Those were the players just a year above. And then the year above that, you had your John Curtis's, Mark Wilson's, who are all both actually in America at the moment, and I keep in touch with them. So yeah, there was always quality there. And, you know, and it makes you better, a better player playing with obviously quality players. And every time we went and played another team, regardless who it was, whether it be Manchester City, Everton, Liverpool and so on, because at the time Manchester United were so dominant at first team level. So every time people played us, they always worked a tiny bit harder, and they made it a bit harder for us. So we were always aware of that and up for every challenge every week, you know.
I'm sure it was a lot of fun. But didn't you start off though with Millwall? You went to Millwall first as a kid.
Yeah, I was with Belvedere Football Club in Fairview. I started with Seagrange, a local club in Baldoyle. Had a great time there with some great coaches, and was looked after really well. And then ended up playing for my school team in St. Fintan's, and John Moore became the coach, who was heavily involved with Belvedere Football Club, one of the biggest clubs in Ireland for developing and producing youth players. So I went into Belvedere and started playing for them. And through Belvedere, one of the coaches was a Millwall scout. And after a couple of months of doing well, he sent me to Millwall. There was a great Irish connection. Mark Kennedy was breaking in to the first team. Mick McCarthy was the manager. And I went over there a couple of times and really liked it, actually. And with that Irish connection, felt very comfortable. And again, went on my school holidays over there. And then Manchester United came in for me, and a lot of other clubs kind of were interested. And yeah, so Millwall was an interesting one. But Mick McCarthy then went on to become the Irish manager, and things probably changed at the club a bit. And at that point, it was always looking like I was going to sign for Manchester United.
So you grew up in Sutton, in Glencarrick, playing on the streets with your mates. Big part of you, you know, loving the game. 1988 would have been the big Jack Charlton year. Big influence there.
Yeah, we always talk about it now in terms of development of players and what's missing, and the lack of that street soccer culture isn't there. But that's really what we grew up playing, in Glencarrick, playing on the street or playing in the field or Santa Sabina field. Just me and my mates, really, just playing every day, all day, and kicking the ball and playing with older people and playing with younger people and just figuring things out, really. And that was really the foundation for me in terms of, you know, the technical side of the game and control and passing and shooting and all heading and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that I always say that playing that street soccer back then was a massive part of my development. I didn't know it at the time, but it's something that's missing now. But yeah, we were out every day playing, and 88 was big because Ireland had qualified for European Championships, the first one that ever qualified for. We were watching all the games, we were playing every day, you know, the players became our heroes. We tried to, you know, copy them on the green and different things like that. So that was really the start of it. And then obviously 1990, they qualified for the World Cup in 94. So it was a big boom in Irish soccer at the time, which obviously gave us as kids the enthusiasm to want to play and want to be professionals.
Favourite players at that time as a kid?
Yeah, lots. I mean, there was Ronnie Whelan, Liam Brady, you know, Ray Houghton, John Aldridge, all these great, great players, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably an attacking midfielder, you know. I always liked Ronnie Whelan and players like that. And yeah, just, you know, all the players really. It was just some real icons of the game from Ireland that played around that period. And yeah, it was just a good time to be growing up and playing soccer.
So let's fast forward a little bit to these injuries that you suffered. You had quite a few, actually. So you had to almost leave England and come back and play in the League of Ireland.
Yeah.
You signed for UCD.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of niggly injuries and the Osguts and the growing pains, but the main injury was an issue. I laugh about it. People always ask me how my knees are. The knees weren't really the issue. It was my pelvis. I basically had bony erosion and the left side of my pelvis eroded away, and they couldn't figure out why that happened or how it happened. And it was kind of like a series of kind of trial and error operations and injections and treatments to see if they could fix it. It was a kind of unique injury at the time. But one of the things suggested back then was if I came back to Ireland and went to UCD. UCD is a college, University College Dublin. I could get a bit of an education with a sports management diploma and also play, because they thought the injury might go away with time as I grow and develop and become stronger. And if I played at a lesser intensity in terms of training, you know, obviously in England and Manchester, I was training and playing 6 days a week, where in League of Ireland at the time, it would have been two sessions and a game. They thought I might be able to grow out of the injury and obviously then get somewhat of an education. So it seemed like a common sense at the time. So I went to UCD on loan and, you know, had a bit of a run year one and played some games. But then over time, the injury came back again, which was very disappointing. But I had another operation, had many operations along the way, and a bit of a comeback. And after that, I went over to Millwall. You know, I could have gone back to Manchester at the time, but we felt going to Millwall at that particular time, I'd missed so much that I'd have a better chance of getting into the first team quicker. And of course, I could showcase myself for the full international team and things like that. But unfortunately, after, you know, 3 months of the Millwall stint, the injury came back, which would have been on my 21st birthday.
But didn't you go over to United after doing well in UCD initially? Weren't you invited over to United in a training session where you actually played with the first team? I think you were 18 years of age at that time.
Well, the plan was I went to see the boss, Sir Alex Ferguson, and actually asked, could I get released initially or go on loan to UCD, and the concept behind it, you know, and they agreed to it. And the whole concept would be that, you know, Neil Bailey, the youth coach, would keep in touch with me and I'd come back when I was available to do training. So I'd keep the link there. So, yeah, I went back. Probably at the end, middle to end of the first year, I was in UCD and I did a week's training and I was with the reserves and then I was with the first team. We had a training game and I, you know, got that experience. And, you know, at that time I was feeling good and I was fit and my leg felt really, really good, my pelvis, and things were kind of looking on the up. But, you know, at that stage it looked like only a matter of time before I got back over full time. You know, but obviously I was finishing out my stint in UCD. And it wasn't really till the second season that the injury really started coming back. The grind of playing every week at a good level and then the training. And every time I tried to up my training to get back to kind of the level I wanted to be at, I'd break down, you know.
In that game that you played in that training game, the first team, who played in that game?
Yeah, it would have been, you know, the likes of Ryan Giggs and David Beckham and Roy Keane and Solskjaer, who's obviously the manager now, and Teddy Sheringham. And the Nevilles and Button, all that crew, and obviously quality players, and just great to be on the same pitch as them and getting that experience. And as I said, coming back from that week's training, things were looking up. My leg felt good. I'd had a great week training with the reserves and then training with the first team. And everything was good. And that was kind of the issue. You know, all along you'd have, you know, bad times where you're in the treatment room or you get an operation or you're in rehab. And then you'd have a glimmer of hope every now and then. And that was one of them where the glimmer of hope was there that, you know, I was competing and functioning at that level with those players. And then, you know, you roll the clock forward and, you know, 6-7 months later, you know, I'm back in the treatment room, you know, having an operation and so on. And then the comeback to Millwall, and I had a great pre-season there. I felt really, really good. It was a good team then with Timmy Cahill and Richard Sadlier and Warner and goals. It was some really good players. And I felt great in pre-season, and I signed a contract. And then 3 months later, of course, the injury came back again. And then you're retiring and you're coming back to Ireland. And that was kind of the roller coaster, you know.
How did you handle having to retire at such a young age at Millwall? We're talking about circumstances here that definitely must have got in on you.
Yeah, that was a tough time, because that was, you know, when I came back from United first, I was still playing. I was going to UCD. The goal was to get back. There was a strategic plan to get back to England. And then, you know, but when the Millwall thing happened, and that was the first time I retired officially. And it was my 21st birthday. I remember my sister came over to visit me. And my friend Ali was over in London at the time. And we hung out for the weekend. And I didn't actually tell them that on the Friday or the Thursday, I think it was my actual birthday, that, you know, my career was pretty much over. And we tried to enjoy the weekend. And I went back at Christmas. And Christmas wasn't too bad, because you had that couple of weeks hanging out with your mates. And I tried to forget about it and just get on with Christmas, which can be a fun time. But then once January set in and everyone kind of got back to what they were doing, working or college or whatever, that's when it kind of really hit me. And that's, I suppose, and a topic, you know, we're going to talk about depression and stuff like that. That's when that started really sinking in, and the realization that my career was over. And, you know, you kind of lose your identity a bit, because when you leave at 15, or when you go on trial at 11 and then 15, you leave to go to England, you know, all you're really associated with is that sport and being a football player. And suddenly you're sitting at home in January in Ireland. You've got no career, limited education, you're not sure what direction you're going, your dreams are over, and you lose your self-esteem, really. And that's really, that was a tough time. And that's, I suppose, really when I started getting depressed, and probably not knowing at the time, because, you know, I didn't really know what depression was. But looking back on it, I was definitely starting to get depressed back at that period.
That's a sad story, but at the same time, you came out of it.
Yeah, I mean,
you made a comeback.
There was many ups and downs after that, but you know, I was getting into the kind of workforce then, and I was looking at different options and looking at the media, and I did some work on radio commentating on League of Ireland games. I ghost. A couple of articles in the Independent and a weekly column in the Dublin Daily back then, and I was just trying to kind of, you know, get things moving in relation to that career wise. But you know, it was a tough time, but you just, I suppose, got to try and keep yourself busy.
But you did make a comeback. You went and had an operation and did rehab in Belgium, correct? You came back and signed for St. Pat's.
Yeah.
So how did that go?
Well, another...
What happened there?
Yeah, another comeback, and you could argue that was a bit of desperation at that point, but...
Denial?
Yeah, denial and desperation and everything, really. But I was working for Pat Devlin, who was Damien Duff's agent at the time. And, you know, I was bringing a lot of agents and coaches from Europe to League of Ireland games to watch players. And one of the agents who I'd met a few times and brought to games, you know, knew a very well-known doctor called Gert de Klerk from Belgium, who was renowned for operating on lots of top sports people, particularly soccer players. And he was linked into leaving Maaskalk, who was a top rehab specialist. And he said I should go over and see them, that, you know, maybe, you know, as the years have gone on, maybe there's more modern you know, techniques and operations and rehabs that might get me back. So I went over to see the doctor, James Timmons, a good friend of mine who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, came with me, and shows how good a friend he is. He came over to Belgium, And the doctor basically said he thought he might be able to get me back playing, but if not, he feels he could help me in the long term everyday living. And then I kind of went back to Ireland and had to make that decision, and I just decided to go for it. And I went to Belgium, I had an operation, and I did 9 months rehab in Belgium with Levan Maskalk. And it was intense, but I spent a lot of money doing it. Obviously, I wasn't with a club, it was coming out of pocket. It was a risk in terms of that from the financial point of view. But I just felt at the time I wanted to try it. It didn't work. I got back and played for St. Pat's. And that was in a view to kind of get myself fit to go back to England. And of course, I broke down again. So it was devastating. But looking back at it, you know, it was definitely desperation. I don't regret it. You have to go and try things. I did it. I'm probably a stronger personality for it. But definitely a bit of desperation, a bit of denial at that period of time. And, you know, when I retired after that, that was definitely the end, you know.
Well, that desperation would have been when you left Pats to go up north to play for Glentoran, because you needed to get back playing as quick as possible after your break at the Christmas. And it was actually in Glentoran when you did your second retirement, correct?
Yeah, well, I was in Pats and I was struggling in Pats really with the injury after pretty soon into it. And I kind of fogged that off and kind of just said, well, you know what, I've been out for a long time. I'm just coming back from the operation. You know, maybe this isn't a big issue. Maybe I just need a bit of a break over Christmas and then I'll regroup. I'll go up north to Glentoran because the League of Ireland was a summer season, so that was finished in November. I took 3 or 4 weeks off and then I said I'll go up north without the regular season. I'll get some games under my belt and then try and go back to England then. And, you know, that was, again, like a bit of denial, thinking the injury was okay when it really wasn't. And I went up and signed for Glentoran and, you know, 6 to 8 weeks in, injury was back, and I knew then it was over, you know, and I had to, you know, pack it in. So it was what it was, but you know, that was a tough time. And then you really know it's over then, and you're trying to pick up the pieces and figure out what you're going to do, you know.
So now you're really in the doldrums. Now you're really struggling, right? You're broke. you've no career. You have an education behind you, but now you're really struggling, right? You've paid a huge amount of money in Belgium. You've tried to make your comeback. It's not working out. Now you must be really down and out, are you?
Yeah, that was a tough one because it was definitely tougher. It was definitely over then. And you kind of, when I went to Belgium, I was kind of saying, you know what, I've been through that kind of upset of not making it. So, you know, make sure I go into this with my eyes open. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, and I did genuinely think that if it didn't work in Belgium, I wouldn't feel as bad as I did previously when I retired. But for whatever reason, I felt worse after that whole saga. You know, I put a lot of time and effort into it. I spent a lot of money, obviously, going to Belgium and doing it. You know, I had a bit of an education, you know, from UCD diploma, but I didn't have a degree. But more importantly, I didn't have my identity. I didn't know what I was. I didn't know what I could do. I didn't know what I could have been good at, because all my life I was a good soccer player. That's what I did. So there was that insecurity of not knowing, you know, where I was going to go with my life.
Did you seek help?
Well, initially, you know, I was definitely struggling mentally, but again, you know, not so much now, but still, it is still a bit of a taboo subject, but more so back then. You know, depression, you know, people didn't understand it or talk about it. And, you know, again, although I looking back, I was definitely suffering from depression. You don't really know you are. But, you know, I remember my mom telling me, you know, she knew instinctively as a mom, she knew there was something wrong. And, you know, same, you know, go down to our family doctor, Dr. Jennings, have a chat, you know, went down to him, had a chat with him, and he was on it. In a heartbeat, he knew exactly what was going on and explained how, like, I'd been through a lot from a young kid in terms of the expectations of being a footballer. And every time it doesn't work, you get a setback and that brings you down, and then you get a bit of a high and then a setback and that brings you back down. So he suggested going to a guy called Enda Murphy, who was a cognitive behavioral therapist, which I, at the time, I was reluctant to do, but I knew I had to do something. So I went to Enda, who was absolutely brilliant. And we just talked. We met once a week and we talked. And he just gave you some mental tools, how to deal with the moment and how to deal with each day, live in the day, and just little things that would help you kind of get through each day. And ultimately, when I eventually moved to America, because I knew I had to start afresh and start a new life, I think a lot of the stuff he gave me in terms of the mental tools really helped me get on the plane to get over here to try and start a life for myself. And don't get me wrong, and I say this all the time, even though I felt bad at the time and I felt sorry for myself and I was depressed, like there's so many people that were way worse off than me. You know, I have friends that, you know, I've had horrific accidents playing sport and rugby and different things like that. You know, so you sound kind of selfish moaning and groaning about your issues, because in the grand scale of things, I couldn't play football, no big deal. But I do always say it is all relative and you have to deal with it as it comes to you. Looking back now, it's easy to say, well, geez, why was I so upset? You know, there's people way worse off in the world. But you have to go through it. Like it's all relative, as I said. So it was a tough time for me. Enda Murphy was brilliant for me. Dr. Jennings, my family doctor, sent me to him, and he was brilliant. And he just gave me the tools and the confidence, how to maybe overcome it and how to have the courage to move on in my life, which gave me the courage to come to New York, really. And
how's that going?
Well, New York's been great for me.
Yeah.
Started slow.
Yeah.
I worked very hard. I did a lot of networking. I did a lot of odd jobs when I first came over here, because you have to have an income coming in. But I wasn't afraid to do that. I had a great set of friends that I made over here. I was very lucky. A lot of people that I met, in including yourself, in the soccer industry and outside of the soccer industry. Good friends like Cahill and Vinny and Johnny and Macker and Nicky and all them boys. I kind of stumbled into friendship with those. And, you know, they give you that security blanket as well, because you know they're good people and you know they want you to do well. If anything doesn't work out, that they're there to help you, or they're there to, you know, maybe open up some doors for you or help you with some work. And that gave me a lot of confidence, when I first came here. So I was very lucky in that sense. And then it was just a case of getting to know the lay of the land in terms of soccer, which is a totally different industry here, networking, which I've always been decent at, and just hustling, really. And slowly but surely, I got the opportunity to set up my company, and it's a private coaching company. And, you know, I'm in many different areas around New York. I'm in Japan and Tokyo now. I've had the privilege to work with David Villa's company, DV7. I've had the privilege to work in the CSL with Lansdowne and the Eagles, in the MPSL, and now the Shamrocks, the New York Shamrocks in the CSL as well. And I've just been involved in a lot of different projects, met a lot of great people, and slowly but surely built my company up.
How's it going at the Shamrocks?
Shamrocks is great, yeah. It's the longest running Irish club in America. They've 7 teams, 2 women's teams and 5 men's teams. I'm the manager of the first team, which is a very good standard. It's probably the highest level of amateur soccer in America. There's a lot of former pros that come back and play in the league. There's a lot of young players that end up going professional. We have one player in Germany at the moment, doing very well. So it's a very high standard. And then we have the Metro team, we have the reserve team, the over 30s, the legends, and the two women. Our women's first team are phenomenal. They're just a joy to watch. It's a fantastic club. They've been really good to me. And I'm just delighted to be there and be involved. We just signed a deal to play Manchester United Legends against our Legends on June 22nd, which will be up, I believe, in Gaelic Park, which is a massive occasion for us and anyone that really likes soccer in New York to come and watch that game. So, yeah, very happy in the Shamrocks and lucky to be there.
Well, as you know, I played for the Shamrocks myself, so I'll probably be marking you in that game. So what else are you doing? Aren't you a director for Clarkstown?
Yeah, well, within what I do within the company, I kind of, you know, help a lot of youth clubs, and a big part of what I do is up in Clarkstown Soccer Club. We've 2,500 kids, and my job is really to create a philosophy and implement that and a culture not just develop and produce players, but also develop and produce young people with the right principles in life, really. And I take great pride in that, in terms of teaching people the value of work ethic, teaching people to win and lose with dignity, teaching young people how to express themselves on the pitch, which in turn can help them express themselves off the pitch, which is very important. We're not trying to create robots on and off the pitch. So I take great pride in that. It's a fantastic club with a great history. And yeah, I've really enjoyed being up there, and it's a big part of what I do. We've had a lot of success in terms of producing players, producing young coaches that come through the system and come back and coach. A lot of our players have gone and played in high school or gone and played in college. So yeah, that's an exciting project and a big part of my life at the moment.
Well, in your career, you mentioned about doing a diploma in UCD. You also wrote a few columns, a few articles for newspapers. And now you've got this podcast up and running. How's that going for you?
Yeah, the pod, we're on it now, but the pod is interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, you've done 5-6 now already.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I'm learning as I go. You know, I got some great advice from some good people, and you know, someone like Joe Rogan, who has one of the biggest podcasts in the world. I mean, his advice in terms of just get it out there. You know, don't be worried what people think in a negative way. Don't think too long about doing it because you'll never get it done. Just do it and push it out there and be brave enough to do that, because you don't want to be the person that just talks about doing something. And it's something I've always wanted to do. For the last 2 years, I've said, I want to do a podcast. I want to do a podcast. Never knew how to do it. Never probably thought I'd be any good at it. And maybe I'm not, by the way, but I've got it out there. And it was a big goal of mine in 2018. I wanted to have it up and running before the year finished, which I did. We're now in 2019 and, you know, we're on to our 6th podcast. You know, little things like sound has been an issue, particularly with the phone in interviews. We've had some issues with sound, but it's trial and error. And I'd prefer to kind of get it out there and learn as I go. And we're in talks with a studio in Brooklyn to get a better setup in terms of sound. I've got some fantastic guests lined up, but I want to wait till kind of I understand the whole industry and the setup better. You know, but listen, it's out there. And I'm proud that I did it. And, you know, you've got to be willing to put yourself out there and open for criticism. I've had some great constructive criticism and some great feedback. I've had a bit of negativity towards it, which is fine. And you got to take that on the chin. But listen, you're better off trying things. I'll never be afraid to try something. And, you know, got some good advice along the way. And just happy that it's out there.
It seems to be a pathway for you, a career in this industry, you know, writing articles, podcast. When are you going to write your story? When is that going to happen?
Yeah, well, I laugh at that because I did sign a contract 5 years ago, I think it was now, with Sterling and Ross Publishing Company to do the book about kind of my story. We went in different directions. After about a year, it was clear they wanted to go in a different direction with the book than, say, I did, and for different reasons. So we decided to go our separate ways. So that kind of got put on the shelf for a long time. And in more recent times, you know, in the last kind of 6 to 8 months, there's been a bit of interest from some people to pick it back up and maybe finish a bit of work that we had done. So we're looking into that. That's something I would love to do. I think it'd be nice to do it. I think there's a nice story there, particularly for the young aspiring players, to see what the life of an aspiring young footballer is all about, the pros and cons, and good for parents who have kids that aspire to play. But there's no rush with it. You know, it's something in the background chipping away at, but there's no rush with it, because as you go, there's more stories to tell. So something that was going to happen then wasn't happening, and now will probably happen, but just taking our time with it.
It would certainly be a story for the young players, and for players who go through tough times.
But it's a funny one, because again, like, you know, a few people in general, I'm surrounded by some brilliant people and very positive people, but you would always, you know, get a bit of negativity around things you're trying to do. And some people saying, sure, who would want to read your story? That's a great point, and maybe no one would want to read it. But I think the market there is for the players that currently play in my academy, because it gives them an insight into what it's all about. And it's not an ego play by me. It's just people have asked me, parents and of the kids have asked me, they'd love to have a more detailed insight into my story, because people over here don't maybe understand what it was like, or how often do you train, what time do you train, what did you do in training, you know, what was the pathway to try and make it as a professional, like where did you start, and so on and so on. So that they're really the audience. And listen, if one person reads it, that's great, but it's something in the pipeline, and it's a process, so we'll see what happens.
Well, we're certainly getting to know you a lot better, which is very important to understand, you know, who you are, what you're all about, what has been your career. And I definitely have to ask you, are the boots going back on for the Shamrock United game? I mean, you have to end on that. We want to know you're making the comeback.
Yeah, well, there's been rumours I might have a little cameo, but...
Which team?
Well, both. I mean, I'm not a legend for either, to be honest, obviously, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I just think it's a great occasion for the New York Shamrocks to have such a, you know, they were founded in 1960. It's a big, big club, and to be able to pull the Manchester United legends over in New York, a fantastic city, it's great PR for us. It's a great fundraiser for the club. The players that come over will have a great time because of the city will look after them well. And there'll be some great former Shamrocks players playing, like yourself, I'm sure. I might do a 5-minute cameo, I'm not sure, but I just think the bigger picture is it's just a great day for the club. We'll do our annual banquet that night, and it's just something really exciting. And just really happy to be involved, and they've been great to me, and they've really trusted me in my position. They've let me do my job, which, you know, not clubs don't always do that when they bring managers in. They want to micromanage, but the Shamrocks have brought me in, they've trusted me, and they've supported me in everything I've needed. You know, and it's been one of my most enjoyable projects, you know.
You got to get the boots on. Thanks very much for all that. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.